This life, these bodies, this world is all temporary. We are made of physical matter that is decaying more and more every day. We are physical and live in a physical world, but while we are here, we are instructed to be like our elder brother. Just as the Israelites were slaves to the Egyptians, we are slaves to our human nature and the sin that we struggle with every day. But we are on a journey. We are headed to be in the kingdom. We are on a pilgrimage. A pilgrimage is a journey to a sacred place or a spiritual journey. Anytime we travel anywhere, we should have some kind of planning that's involved. We must have a plan or some type of itinerary. I have had the ability to go on a few camping and hiking trips in my time. I know there's many in here that have been on countless trips through the wilderness and into the mountainsides. So for those that have gone on those trips, you know that you just don't decide to leave your house and go into the woods. It takes planning and strategy. We need to know the land we will be traversing and staying in. We need to know the weather conditions for the time that we'll be out there. And we for sure need to know how much food and water we need to complete such a task. Likewise, the children of Israel, after 400 years of bondage, were released by the blessings / plagues of the mighty God, and they set off on a journey into the land of Egypt, through the deserts, and across the Red Sea, to eventually end up going into the wilderness, and they were heading to a promised land. In this sermon, I would like to compare two expeditions from the 1800s to see why one was successful and why the other was, for the most part, an utter failure. Expedition 1, the Lewis and Clark Expedition, 1804 to 1806, was a federally funded venture to explore the North American West. The expedition's principal objective was to survey the Missouri and Columbia Rivers and to locate routes that would connect the continental interior to the Pacific Ocean. The Louisiana Purchase of 1803, in which the United States acquired some 800,000 square miles of land west of the Mississippi River, facilitated this mission. It allowed the explorers unprecedented access to a land that was previously owned to Spain and France. The president at the time, Thomas Jefferson, invested his time, energy, political capital into this project, and he took direct charge of the initial planning and organization. The expedition, of course, was named after the commanders, Meriwether Lewis and William Clark. Under their leadership, a group of 33 known as the Corps of Discovery, they succeeded in reaching the Pacific and returning safely despite considerable challenges. Challenges ranging from navigating unfamiliar terrain and to maintain good relations with the numerous Indian tribes that they came across on the Louisiana Territory. Along the way, the expedition gathered invaluable scientific, ethnographic, which is the custom of individual peoples and cultures, and cartographic information, which is the drawing maps, surveying the land, creating a detailed written record of the journey in a series of journals. President Jefferson's choice to lead the expedition was Meriwether Lewis. He was a former secretary to the president and a fellow native of Virginia. He reached the rank of captain in the United States Army. Lewis possessed military discipline and expertise and experience that would prove invaluable. It was important for Lewis to gain certain scientific skills and to buy equipment that would be needed on this journey. In the spring of 1803, Lewis traveled to Philadelphia and he studied under the leading scientist of the day. Lewis learned map making and surveying. He studied about botany. He basically knew what plants could help you and which ones could kill you. He learned about mathematics, anatomy, and fossils. He also learned about certain types of medicines. Lewis purchased many items required for the journey. Some things on the shopping list were scientific instruments such as a chronometer and a sextant, which is a sighting mechanism used for measuring angular distance between two objects. This helped in navigation, of course. They had air rifles, firearms, ammunition, medicines, ink, and other materials for journal keeping, and a large array of other items. They had 200 pounds of portable soup, a cornmeal, mosquito nets, blankets, oiled linen for making tents, candles, tools, and reference books. Lewis also purchased gifts for the Native Americans that they had come across. In Indian culture, gift exchange was a very important sign of friendship and allegiance. So he bought glass beads, mirrors, scissors, thimbles, needles, tobacco, I said it at home, knives, and peace medals. Jefferson was instructed to treat the Indians in the most friendly and peaceful of manner. This was a well-planned out and well-executed expedition. Lewis had all his I's dotted and all his T's crossed. And though he had everything he needed to make the trip a success, which made him have all everything he needed to be successful. Expedition number two. The other expedition is the one of the Donner Party. The Donner Party began their journey in the spring of 1846. And this trip started dangerously late in the pioneer season. Upon reaching what is now Utah, the group had elected to use a shortcut to California that had been recommended to them by an unreliable author. This dishonest guidebook author's name was Lanford Hastings. He promoted a straighter and supposedly quicker path that cut through the Wasatch Mountains and across the Salt Lake Desert. Hastings was also a California booster. He suggested that pioneers would save 400 miles by cutting south around the Great Salt Lake, but Hastings himself had never taken his own shortcut. On July 31st, the Donner Party entered Hastings Cutoff, which would take the group south. And even though he claimed it would shave 400 miles off their journey, in reality, it added 125 miles longer than the established trail that they should have stayed on. This Hastings Cutoff took the pioneers through some of the most inhospitable country in the entire Great Basin. As they continued on the new trail through the nearly impassable terrain, they lost about 2 weeks' time. On August 30th, after gathering as much water and grass as they could carry, they entered the Great Salt Lake Desert. They believed that they could cross the desert in 2 days, but the journey took 6 days and nights. The party lost dozens of cattle in the desert, and several wagons had to be abandoned. Soon, huge boulders, arid desert, and dangerous mountain passes slowed the expedition to a crawl. During one stretch, the party only traveled 36 miles in 21 days. That's going from here to Kingsville. The Donner Party reached the eastern Sierra Nevada Mountains and prepared to cross Truckee Pass, the last remaining barrier before arriving in California's Sacramento Valley. On October 31st, they climbed the High Sierra Ridge in an attempt to cross the pass. But 5-foot-high snow drifts were in their way. Please excuse the gruesomeness of this next part, but I am making a point. Trapped, the party built crude tents and teepees, covered with clothing, blankets, and animal hides. To survive, the Donner Party were forced to eat mice, their rugs, and even their shoes. In the end, surviving members of the party escaped starvation by only eating the flesh of those who died. In mid-December, a group of 12 men and 5 women made a last-ditch effort to cross the pass to find help. They took only six days of supplies and rations, consisting of finger-sized pieces of dried beef, 2 pieces a person per day. During a severe storm, two members in the group died. And this is a quote from one of the journals of the survivors. The surviving member wrote that they stripped the flesh from their bones, roasted and ate them, averting their eyes from each other and weeping, end quote. Going down the wrong path brings sorrow. More than a month passed before 7 frostbitten survivors reached an American settlement. By then, the rest of them had died, and the 2 Indian guides they had were shot and eaten. And that's just the tip of the iceberg of all the other stuff. I couldn't fill it. And it gets gruesomer and gruesomer, so I left it out. A relief team immediately sought to rescue the pioneers still trapped near Tucky Pass. During the winter, 4 rescue parties broke through and got the other survivors. The situation that the rescuers found was unspeakably gruesome. 13 were dead. Surviving members of the Donner Party were delirious from hunger and overexposure. Out of the 87 members of the party, only 47 survived, and only 2 of the families made it intact out of the whole deal. This expedition was a failure from the start. Obviously, the parties involved were not prepared for the journey ahead. They took a path that was untested and was referred to them by basically a liar and a con man. Just as for these traveling pioneers, I too find myself from time to time taking a path that is presented to me by a liar and a con man. And going down the wrong path and following the wrong set of directions will inevitably take us to a place of sorrow and misery. We will not make it to our destination, into the kingdom of God. The children of Israel came out of their bondage by the blessings of the Lord. Deuteronomy 16:1 says that the Lord brought them out by night. Continuing into verse 6, it says that they should be sacrificing the Passover at twilight, at the going down of the sun, at the same time that they came out of Egypt. They came out at night with a high hand with the spoils of Egypt. But this was no accident. It was planned. God planned it for them to come out of bondage. God had them covered, and he was their guide to the promised land. Likewise, we must trust in God. Through his word, he has made his instructions, his guidebook, available to us so we can navigate through this life journey and we can get to our destination safely. It's when we diverge from his plan and veer from his path and we try to take shortcuts or that unproven trail, that's when we can starve ourselves of his spirit. We may get to our destination, but at what cost? We may lose things that are so precious to us along the way, and we may even lose our own salvation. Please, brethren, remember God has set a path for us. He has given us the playbook, his guidebook, and all we need to do is not stray from the course.